Hi, this is rendering editing. I apologize for the dogs playing around in the background. My first file for the Stanford Prison Experiment doesn't want to, like, process. It's having errors, so we're getting an unedited version. Sorry about that. I will try to fix it, but for right now, I'm just putting in the raw file. Okay, cool. Have fun.
Hello, beautiful people. So we are doing an experiment today. Fully ethical, I assure you. I'm trying out a new setup for recording and stuff. So I'm just going to go through this episode and we'll see what happens. I'm actually recording two today, so. All right. So today's experiment topic is the Stanford Prison Experiment. Sources are Simply Psychology again, and let's get into it. This 1973, Zimbardo and company wanted to figure out if prison guard brutality in America prisons was due to the guard's personality or if it was the prison environment itself. So kind of this is more like a nurture versus nature thing, basically. And he hypothesized that it was indeed the environment. So what he did to kind of make this happen, he converted the basement of the Stanford University psych building into a mock prison, like full works, barred doors and windows, bar walls, small cells, bunks, toilets. It looked legit. And to get his people, he advertised for some volunteers to take part in his psychological study of prison life. And at least this time they knew what was being studied. It wasn't just the obedience test experiment. This one they knew ahead of time that it was a psychological study and it was prison life. Anyway, he got 75 applicants, and then these applicants were interviewed and took personality tests because Zimbardo wanted to make sure no one who had pre-existing mental or health issues or like histories of crime or drug use were involved with the study, since the latter would probably skew the results and the former didn't need to be put in a potentially dangerous situation. So I don't know about you. But I got some bad anxiety. I wouldn't want to go through this at all. It would mess me up. And ultimately, he ended up with 24 men. None of them knew each other, and they actually got $15 a day, which now, in 2020, that would be about $88 a day. So then the participants were randomly assigned to either role. However, the end number ended up being 10 prisoners and 11 guards, with two reserves and one dropping out entirely. So at least he was allowed to drop out. So the prisoners were then arrested at their own homes with zero warning, taken to the police station, like the actual police station, fingerprinted, photographed, and essentially booked. Then they're blindfolded and taken to the university, so they didn't know where they were. After arriving at the fake prison, they were stripped naked, deloused, had all personal possessions taken and locked away, and given their prison clothes, bedding, and a number. All of this sounds horrible. No, the number was to make them feel anonymous, with them only being able to refer to themselves and others by their ID numbers. The guards were also referred, so the guards also referred to them by their numbers. The prisoner's uniform consisted of a smock with their number on it, no underwear, a nylon cap, which kind of looked like a beanie, and a locked chain around the ankle. This sounds horrible. All of this sounds horrible. The guards also had identical uniforms consisting of khakis, a whistle, a billy club, like an actual billy club that they borrowed from the cops, and special sunglasses, so eye contact was impossible. Now, I'm not sure if they were mirrored or just like black, and they couldn't make eye contact with anyone while they're wearing these sunglasses. Because that sounds not like a good idea. Like, you're going to run into stuff. So I'm not quite sure how that was laid out. Now, there were three guards on shift for 8 hours with the others on call. And they were instructed to do whatever they felt was necessary to maintain order. However, no physical violence was permitted. I think we all know what's going to happen. Zimbardo was actually on site to both observe the participants and act as a prison warden. And everyone settled into their roles very quickly. Now we'll take a quick break, and we get back. We'll see how this devolves horribly. Right, so within hours, the prisoners are being harassed. At 2:30 a.m., the guards start blasting their whistles for quote-unquote counts, which is a roll call as far as I can tell. And the counts familiarized the prisoners with their numbers and provided the guards with control. The prisoners ended up talking about prison life more often than not, and even, like, tattled on each other to the guards. The prisoners were insulted, given petty orders, pointless tasks, and all in all, dehumanized. Push-ups were common, and guards would either put their foot on their backs or have another prisoner sit on them. Now, this was all within the first day. And this experiment was set to last 2 weeks. The second day broke with a rebellion. The prisoners took off their caps, their numbers, and pushed their beds up against the cell doors. Guards called for reinforcements, and when the morning crew came on, the night crew voluntarily stayed. So now we got 6 guards all at once. The guards responded by using a fire extinguisher on the prisoners to force them back, broke into the cells, stripped the prisoners, and took their beds out. The leaders of this rebellion were placed in solitary confinement. This is the second day. Second day already, we've got like a prison riot. And the harassment continued. So the prisoners who were least involved got special treatment in the quote-unquote privilege cell. So they got their clothes and beds back and were allowed to wash their hair and brush their teeth. They also got to eat in front of those who had lost the privilege. And the guards did this to break any solidarity among the prisoners. Then after the failed rebellion, the prisoners became more dependent and submissive, with the guards becoming more aggressive and assertive. They held the prisoners in contempt and made sure they knew it. And here's a quote that I took directly from the website because I couldn't figure out a better way to rewrite it. So, less than 36 hours into the experiment, prisoner number 8612 began suffering from acute emotional disturbance, disorganized thinking, uncontrollable crying, and rage. This is less than a day and a half. Like, the day before all of this, these guys are fine. And now, 36 hours later, we've got one just having an emotional breakdown. Apparently the guards told him he was weak, but they offered him informant status and apparently told the other prisoners, the prisoner number 8612 said to the other prisoners, "You can't leave, you can't quit." Shortly after, he broke, and it wasn't until he had a full meltdown for the psychologist to realize they needed to take him out of the experiment. Day 3 had a visiting hour for parents and friends of the prisoners. The guards were worried they would want to take the prisoners home upon seeing the state of things, so they had all the prisoners bathe, clean, and polish their cells, give them a big dinner, and played music over the intercom. I don't know about you guys, but this sounds like an abusive relationship. Not cool. And then there was a rumor of a mass escape plan. The guards and experimenters enlisted the help of the actual cops because of this rumor of a mass escape plan. More harassment. Forcing the prisoners to clean toilets with their hands. Now, Zimbardo had a Catholic priest and former prison chaplain come and evaluate the realism of the prison. Half the prisoners introduced themselves by number instead of name, and the priest interviewed each prisoner and told them they needed a lawyer to help them get out. During his interview, prisoner number 819 began crying hysterically. Psychologists removed his chain and cap and told him to go rest in a room adjacent to the prison yard. And he was to wait while they got him some food and they would take him to a doctor. At least this time they realized, you know, sooner that this guy needed a break from the experiment. However, the guards lined up the rest of the prisoners where number 819 could hear them chant, "Prisoner number 819 is a bad prisoner. Because of what prisoner number 819 did, my cell is a mess, Mr. Correctional Officer." The psychologist found him sobbing and tried to convince him to drop out, but number 819 said he couldn't leave because he'd been labeled a bad prisoner. This is so abusive. This is so abusive, guys. And Zimbardo responded with, "Listen, you are not number 819. You are," his name, "and my name is Dr. Zimbardo. I am a psychologist, not a prison superintendent, and this is not a real prison. This is just an experiment, and those are students, not prisoners, just like you. Let's go." To which number 819 suddenly stopped crying and replied, "Okay, let's go." What? What? While the experiment was to last 2 weeks, Zimbardo shuts it down on the sixth day due to more emotional breakdowns on the prisoner's side and excessive aggression on the guards. Now, the only one to object to this experiment was a recent Stanford PhD, Christina Malsok. When she came in to conduct interviews of both prisoners and guards, she spoke out saying it was terrible. About 50 people had seen this experiment, but she was the only one who questioned the morality of it. In 2008, Zimbardo said, "It wasn't until much later that I realized how far into my prison role I was at that point, that I was thinking like a prison superintendent rather than a research psychologist." At least he realizes he messed up. Now, what good did this experiment actually do? It kind of showed that people were readily conformed to social rules, particularly ones with strong stereotypes. The environment was more important than disposition shown by the guards. None of them had shown sadistic tendencies before the study. Now, Zimbardo figured there were two things that resulted in the behavior shown. So one, we have de-individuation, a state when you become so immersed in the norms of the group that you lose your sense of identity and personal responsibility. So that was more for the guards. And then on the prisoner side was learned helplessness, where basically you learn that no matter what you do, it has little effect on what happens to you. And afterwards, Zimbardo interviewed the participants. Now this is one big long quote because I found it really interesting and didn't want to take away by rewording it. All right, so the most of the participants said they had felt involved and committed. The research had felt real to them. One guard said, "I was surprised at myself. I made them call each other names and clean the toilets out with their bare hands. I basically considered the prisoners cattle, and I kept thinking I had to watch out for them in case they tried something." Another guard said, "Acting authoritatively can be fun. Power can be a great pleasure." And another, "During the inspection, I went to cell 2 to mess up a bed, which a prisoner had just made, and he grabbed me, screaming that he had just made it and that he was not going to let me mess it up. He grabbed me by the throat, and although he was laughing, I was pretty scared. I lashed out with my stick and hit him on the chin, although not very hard. And when I freed myself, I became angry." So remember when I said physical violence was not permitted? Yeah, this guy just bopped this dude in the face. And I know it says, although it wasn't hard, still, like, you hit someone in the face with a bully stick. That can't hurt, even if it's just, like, a gentle bop. All in all, both the guards and the prisoners couldn't believe they had behaved as they did. They weren't known for such behaviors. Unfortunately, the experiment was very rigid, for lack of a better word. There are stereotypes we know about prisoners and guards, and the participants may have simply fallen into that, so it can't reliably imitate real-life situations. It also wasn't representative. They were all males and all American. We can't apply the findings to female prisons or ones in other parts of the world, particularly since cultures have a rather large impact on behavior. So really, the only good thing that came out of this were how U.S. prisons are run was altered. For example, juveniles charged with a federal crime are no longer housed before trial with adults. And a formal recognition of ethical guidelines for any psychological studies. Once again, there's very vague consent. Very vague consent. So while the participants knew it was a psychological study pertaining to prison life, but they didn't know what the experiment pertained, nor did they consent to being arrested at home with zero warning. Nor were the participants playing as the prisoners. Wait, let me say that again. Nor were the participants playing as the prisoners were protected from harm. Of both, like, physical and psychological harm. Zimbardo's counterpoint to this was that there was no way to know what would happen. There was no way to know. But, like, we know shit goes on in prisons. We knew there was going to be some brutality. Like, we knew that. We knew that already. And then Zimbardo's other, like, counterpoint thing is he concluded that there were no lasting effects based on questionnaires filled out by the participants afterwards from, like, weeks and then to months and then yearly. Yeah. So there's that. I guess I'm just going to end this here, and then I will get recording on the second episode, which is going to be very intense. Fortunately, it's very short, but very intense. I will give plenty of warnings when that one starts, so Yep, there we go. I'm Ren Shepherd, and this is why we can't have nice things.